Audiobook of How to Enjoy Life When You Are Dead by Jurgen Zhu. Published August 2015. Copy from Anna's Archive. Our biggest frontiers remain unexplored. By the time you have finished reading this introduction, 3,000 people will have died on our planet. By the end of the day, their numbers could populate a small town if they were to gather in one place. The vast majority of these people will have no idea of what has happened to them and what is going to happen after their body has been recycled. Our ignorance about our future destiny when we die is problematic because it is the source of much fear, uncertainty and suffering. Simply subscribing to the belief of the atheist, which states that when the electricity powering our brains is switched off, our consciousness simply vanishes into nothingness, hardly makes us feel any better. And even if this were true, then this would probably be the only occurrence of nothingness in the whole of nature. Whether we are theists or atheists, having our belief put into question will always antagonize the believer, but as long as we cling to our preconceived ideas without an iota of proof, we are vulnerable to doubt. We will never know what will happen to us when we die unless we can see for ourselves. We are passengers riding on a train without having a clue where it is taking us. We rely on vague ideas and beliefs promoted by others rather than by taking our clues from Mother Nature, who offers us glimpses into our greater reality every night when we go to sleep. She has made provisions for us to learn and find out, if only we pushed the door left ajar for us a little further and walked through while remaining aware. Only fairly recently have the pioneers among the dreamers discovered that we can wake up in our dreams and then take the necessary steps to discover what kind of life lies beyond the limitations of our physical body. The few who dared to step through the door, after giving it a final push, have found the powerful consensus that we can lead a life independent of the physical body and, by implication, a life that continues after death. Not only that, many have returned knowing exactly what their future life will look like and have even contacted their dead relatives in the process of finding out. Modern scientists are now referring to this state as non-local consciousness and are hesitantly venturing into territory formerly reserved exclusively for religions and mystics. Ironically, experiences of non-local consciousness don't discriminate between what people believe in. The atheist and the devout Catholic may find themselves walking side by side in non-physical locations until their beliefs tear them apart. The atheist may discover, provided he ventures far enough, that there is a root level to his consciousness which may prove him right in his belief that there is indeed nothing, and yet this nothingness is nothing he could have ever imagined. The person believing in God may also find himself proven right, but the God he expected to find is beyond anything he could have imagined as well. The atheist and the theist are both simultaneously on the right and the wrong track, but to reach this point of realization they will have to walk the long and winding road through the great unknown and their very own unconscious mind and render it conscious. I, personally, have spent many hundreds of hours in full waking awareness outside of my body on the flip side of physical life and meticulously recorded what I found in my diaries over a period of more than 40 years. These experiences, some lasting several hours, were the byproduct of my regular deep meditation practice I have been conducting all my life, between 1 and 2 hours every day on a regular basis. If I were to string all these hours together, it would amount to spending over 3 years in an altered state of consciousness. So what I have unearthed is not the result of any seance, imagination, wishful thinking, billboard or self-hypnosis. I was not channeling, nor was I dreaming or confabulating. It was the natural outcome when consciousness is focused consistently and regularly over a long period on the very roots of its own genesis. What I discovered I experienced in full waking consciousness, while during my physical waking hours I built a commercial career and held down a responsible and successful job, often while working 60 hours a week as a freelance commercial illustrator. Yet the more I discover, the more I have to admit how little I actually know, because the moment I climb to the top of a hill I discover a whole new unexplored mountain range right in front of me. As insignificant as my research appeared, I conducted it authentically in an altered state while I was fully awake with my self-awareness intact, in a state of consciousness which was often clearer, sharper and more enhanced than my normal waking awareness. I believe the main reason this process became possible in the first place was simply my refusal to accept that what entered my five senses was all there was to reality, which led me on a lifelong quest to find out who or what this consciousness was that was conscious. The only way to do this was by looking at consciousness itself via meditation. It is a tragedy that even intelligent people are addicted to their belief that what they see and feel with their five senses is all there is to see of the whole of reality, even though modern science reveals a completely new and different take on existence almost on a weekly basis. Having turned my attention in the opposite direction beyond the senses, I have discovered that what we witness during our waking day is only a minuscule part of the whole of our reality, not even the tip of the iceberg. So here are my reports, down to earth, authentic, dispassionately recorded, subjective as well as objective, laid out in front of you from the viewpoint of an out-of-body traveling journalist and artist. I am reporting what I found as I peek beyond appearances into the life that unfolds at the end of our journey. When I first set out on the journey over 40 years ago, I never even knew out-of-body experiences existed. They were just a bonus of studying consciousness from the inside. When I experienced my first OBE in the early 1970s, it disassembled my perceived world of reality completely. I had no idea whether I had experienced a brain seizure, had plunged through a mysterious wormhole in space and time, or whether I had lost my mind. Soon after the first strange anomalies happened, they began to happen more regularly and I started recording and experimenting with them. They had set in motion the most powerful shift in my perception of reality and the universe surrounding us and could not be ignored. But to qualify for an entry into my journal, they had to adhere scrupulously to the following criteria. 1. I had to have full waking consciousness while out of my body. 2. I had to be fully aware that my physical body was in another place. 3. I had to have full awareness of my waking life's social identity. 4. I had to be fully aware that the experience was not even part of a lucid dream, let alone a dream. It was only under these conditions that my reports would qualify as a valid testimony for the existence of non-local consciousness. Some of these experiences lasted several hours, far longer than the average near-death experience. My longest experience, reported in my first book Multi-Dimensional Man, lasted over 6 hours. It was so intense and so vivid that I feared I might have died and permanently moved into a non-physical reality. Several times during this lengthy excursion, I returned to my body to check that it was still alive. When I finally returned to my body for good in the early hours of the morning, I found to my dismay that large chunks of my memory of the event were missing, with only fragments retained and perhaps just 1 hour of the whole experience intact enough to be recorded. This made me rethink my strategies for recall. When our finer, non-physical energy body is reunited with the physical body, a large part of the experience gets lost. This is why many people don't remember their dreams. My first book of my adventures in non-physical realities was published in 2008. Since then, I have adopted more stringent new recall techniques in order to overcome memory disruptions, using the following technique. Where I could, I would try to rerun the experience through my mind while still in OBE state. At times, I would even report the experience to other non-physical characters to solidify it in my mind. On re-entry into the physical body, I would lie completely still, not moving an inch, with my eyes still shut. In this position, I would run through the whole experience again in my mind. If necessary, I would do that again to make sure of any additional details that might have been overlooked. Upon finally moving and opening my eyes, I would grab my pad and pen, which were always close at hand, and write the whole experience into my diary. I would then read through it again and pen down any fragments and keywords that popped into my mind. I would close my eyes and recall any memory connected to them. I would then type my notes out. On occasion, I would use deep meditation to go back into the experience for further recall. This way, I was able to retrieve other relevant detail. This technique worked so well for me that even now I can clearly picture whole scenarios as if they were memories from a holiday vacation. Because these out-of-body states were experienced in full waking consciousness, I no longer see a qualitative distinction between my experiences in physical waking reality and those in the non-physical one. I simply now view waking experience in the context of a unified greater reality where one feeds and informs the other, with one being just as relevant and as important as the other. These are the reports recorded since 2008 when my first book came out. As I am not fond of repeats, you will find subjects in my first book not covered here at all, such as the Akashic records, past life experiences and a closer examination of non-physical manifestation phenomena. But in the spring of 2013 I had a powerful transformative experience while on a solitary meditation retreat in the Scottish mountains, which I chronicled in my book The 10-Minute Moment. This led to a complete change of perception in my day-to-day reality. It rooted my identification in a constant and unchanging experience of the present, the now. All my old identifications with my social self were overruled by an awareness of a greater connected self, an awareness that every moment is new, without any repeats, that there can no longer be a distinction between an inside and an outside world. Personal identification had been upgraded to an identification with a permanent awareness of the present. The illusion that thoughts, with their concepts and abstractions, could form an accurate representation of reality inside my brain, which was largely dictated by past experience and projections of the future, were completely dismantled and no longer held any power over me. In its place came an acute notice perception, with the decisions derived from it informing my action. I was overnight liberated from the former great deception. The implications on the quality of my life were enormous. In turn, this also led to a deeper kind of meditation which allowed me, the moment I closed my eyes, to take residence in this type of present awareness. Rather than focusing attention on a point, which I regarded as separate, I intimately and naturally identified with the object of awareness. This was simply a stance I had brought over from my new daily and now constant mode of reality awareness. I no longer divided reality into an outside and inside world. I had assimilated that in consciousness the distinction and separation was an illusion. Consequently, it became much easier to live in this new kind of reality, because the control was all mine, even if physical forces appeared to have the upper hand. I had brought lucid awareness into my everyday life. As a consequence, my meditation had changed too, as consciousness no longer allowed for discrimination between myself and the object of meditation. I no longer followed a meditation technique. My meditation was simply being conscious. Wherever I am, the point of awareness is what I am, an awareness of the here and now, which is constant, still and new every moment. Because of this, the focus is on reality untarnished by beliefs and prejudgments. When I closed my eyes to meditate, I now had become the point of focus, merged with the focus, whether it was focused on my breath, a space of light or simply a mantra, which could dispatch me into other levels of reality. This new type of shifting awareness away from a perceived ego or a conditioned self made it possible to enter and observe realities which were previously hard to access, and as a result I was able to go with more depth into those states of consciousness I had in my previous book referred to as the super dimensions, although this is not always as straightforward as it sounds because it requires the cooperation of a far greater and deeper aspect of ourself. I will document how this greater reality aspect of ourselves determines everything we are and sets the course of our evolution as a human species. Another change that became apparent since my first book was that I viewed out-of-body experiences differently. Instead of using them as a welcome opportunity to enhance my meditation, I allowed them to unfold and regarded them as a guided learning opportunity, set up for me by a higher awareness, in order to learn about aspects of consciousness and non-physical reality which are relevant to and affect a large part of our population when we die. Rather than aiming to focus on the more pleasant pastures of higher dimensional realities, I was often persuaded to scout the common territories and conditions presented to me that the majority of people will need to grapple with when leaving their physical reality behind at death. This allowed me to pay special attention to the psychological subconscious forces acting out in our post-life states, which traditionally have never been fully explored or understood. So far, the only, often derided and ridiculed, sources of information about non-physical realities have been supplied by talented individuals known as mediums. This skill of hidden reality viewing has often been exploited by charlatans claiming to have these abilities in order to make money and exploit weak-minded people. In reality, the genuine skills are probably quite rare and have nothing to do with mentalism. Yet in one important aspect, mediums are at a disadvantage to out-of-body observers. They rarely visit non-physical reality with all their inner senses employed simultaneously, and therefore there are plenty of things which are highly relevant to us, but have rarely been reported by traditional medium communication. I am hoping these first-hand, full sensory reports will lead to new insights and a deeper understanding of the nature of our greater reality and our afterlife. I will also take a new look at the much more sublime reality levels of consciousness, which can only be reached once ego identification has been transcended and the person freely surrenders to a much higher aspect of consciousness. These states have often been referred to as the heaven states by the mystics or, in esoteric literature, the mental and causal states or cosmic consciousness. As mentioned, as an out-of-body experiencer, I very much consider myself to be an investigative reporter, researching the mysterious workings of our multi-dimensional realities. I am also an artist, and I feel passionate about the visual presentation and beauty the visible and invisible worlds have to offer. Where my words have failed, I have tried to sketch it in pictures, although these are a poor representation of the actual sceneries. It is not my objective to bring back proof of an afterlife, or to try to convince skeptics of facts that need to be experienced firsthand to be fully appreciated. This book is simply the testimony of an authentic personal fact-finding mission of reality, as well as paying homage to the incredible privilege we are given as human beings to enjoy it. In this process, not only will I try to put across what makes up our possible afterlife, but also what underpins our waking life and our physical existence as well, and so makes sense of our world. Exploring non-physical reality, if you want to find out about life after your death, pay attention to your dreams. The 21st of March 2010, where did I park the car? The way the morning sunlight caught the sea of wet pebbles on the beach made it feel as if I was walking across a bed of diamonds. The foamy surf of the waves breaking gently on the shore was not like the white noise one normally associates with the ocean's edge, but more like a multitude of musical notes strung together to form a harmonic symphony. Above all, the light of the sun was pure gold, throwing its fine particles like luminous net over the world and elevating everything touched by it into glorious splendor. I moved gently along the shoreline, careful not to be caught by the pearly foam bubbles which stroked the beach so gently that I instantly detected that nature this morning was made out of pure love. I felt light on my feet, which seemed to dance to the tunes of the multitudes of sounds rather than walk, dragging my heavy body along. The air was fresh and incredibly clear, rendering everything sharp, as if the world was enhanced by light passing through a pure giant crystal. In the past, I had witnessed many sunrises, but nothing had ever compared to this. I was overawed by this unique spectacle of nature. It felt as if atoms which were concocting this world were swirling around me like fireflies, buzzing through my heart and out again, collecting my love and distributing it all over the world in gratitude for being a beneficiary of such a beautiful morning. I could not imagine ever having been witness to a scene of such serene and natural splendor. As I walked further along the beach, I began to question why I had not brought my camera, mournfully looking at the treasures which passed me by without being recorded, such a missed opportunity. being enraptured by this splendid and continuous moment, where time had taken leave, I stopped and began to wonder how I'd got here. The trance of joy I felt on this glorious morning had momentarily erased my memory, and I began to wonder where I had parked my car. It was 15 miles from where I lived, and the only way of getting here so early in the morning was by car. I looked up the embankment towards the coastal road of Brighton Beach, but I remembered nothing. The houses lining the seafront were enhanced by the amber light of the sun, but I didn't remember parking my car anywhere near them. Meanwhile, the glorious morning sun had just begun trading in its gold for a more mellowed silver, and yet I still had no recollection where I had parked my car. I went back in my mind to retrace my steps, but there was nothing to retrace. All I remembered was getting up for my morning meditation at about 5 o'clock. I was wide awake, so fresh, enjoying my focusing on pure being. There was no thought, just an inkling that under the sea of awareness was an ocean of ecstasy ready to burst to the surface. I observed the calm waves of being, knowing that I could choose to pin my attention on anything, like a hiker would pitch his tent in the wide open frontiers. I chose it to be the sun, an inner sun, illuminating all space as far as the furthest planet of our solar system, shining its bright light and engulfing the Earth and then all space around me. I enjoyed its warming, invigorating light. Then I went into a deep trance, and when I came round I was walking along Brighton Beach, wide awake, but in amnesia. Here I was, in a clarity of waking consciousness I had rarely experienced at any other time in my life. It was only then that I knew with a staggering certainty that I was out of my body. In full possession of a super-waking consciousness, I had translocated 15 miles from home, leaving my body resting in deep meditation, a shell without a soul, a mere coat left casually hanging in the wardrobe while I went out for a stroll. Yet despite my rational analysis, I still could not fully trust this overwhelming realization in the face of this clear waking reality. To make sure, I lifted off the ground. And thankfully it happened, flawlessly, a mere 1 foot high at first. I hovered like a weightless ballet dancer, but that wasn't convincing enough. What if it was a fluke, a misinterpretation of time, a mental misrepresentation of physical action? So I hovered higher, first 2 then 3 feet up, gliding effortlessly over the incoming waves, which were unaffected by my dance. When I jumped up and performed a somersault in slow motion, I was finally convinced. I was out of my body, and yet it felt so physical and real. I hovered up higher, 1 meter then 2, then I floated gently along the beach for another 10-20 meters. When I finally accepted the reality of my out-of-body state, it was too late to take the matter further. I was already back in my coat of flesh, sitting in my meditation chair as if nothing had happened. What makes out-of-body experiences so immensely powerful is the fact that wakeful awareness is no longer tied to the physical body, and with this awareness liberated and no longer burdened with the running of our heavy physical machinery, it can be placed at any point in time and space, in the past or on a completely different dimensional level. We can live an alternative life with the same or an even greater level of awareness than our physical life has to offer. All the time we are still who we are, retaining our full sense of identity. There is no limit to what this me can experience or the places it can visit without the attachment of a physical body. We enter a world of continuity where no ends are in sight, no limits in place, and soon find that we can visit and speak to family members who have died before, and there will not be a shadow of a doubt that we are speaking to the actual people we have loved and known, all the while knowing that our body is still in a place where we left it. Now untethered, we can choose where we want to be with our complete identity intact, in total sanity and in full waking consciousness. Now, just let us sit back and consider the full scope and the implications this can have on the way we will live our lives and how we will regard our future, with no death lurking ominously on the horizon. It is nothing less than a life without limitations. I will come straight to the point. This is not a book about delivering proof of whether it is at all possible for consciousness to work independently from the body or whether there is life after death. I gave up on the concept of death many years ago, and most who have had this kind of experience have done so too. Nor is this a book about teaching the art of achieving this state. Hundreds of books have already been written trying to convince the skeptics that life is a continuum, and dozens more have been written teaching the arts of out-of-body travel and lucid dreaming. This book is simply a testimony of its reality, the incredible scope of it, and the poetry encountered while doing it. The out-of-body state in full waking consciousness is undoubtedly the biggest miracle in human consciousness we can ever experience. And every time I am blessed with this miracle, my life is transformed anew. Every time, despite the fact that I have experienced it hundreds of times before, I feel the same thrill, the same awe. Only people who have never experienced this exalted state will argue that it is an illusion of the mind, a hallucination, a misdirection of brain activity, and thus they will be happy to close their minds to this greatest of all miracles. Without giving it another thought, they will turn their attention to what they consider to be real, the world of hard facts, the hard pain and the outside world that enters our awareness through our five senses and has no link to us whatsoever. To them, the world surrounding us every day with our eyes wide open is seen as the only reality, and everything else can only be a breakdown in coherent brain activity, a hallucination of a delusional mind, self-deception, or the fantasy of overactive imagination, where we would be advised to seek the help of a medical professional and request suitable prescription drugs. At best, it is simply a dream we ought to shake off in the morning so we can carry on with our real life, the only reality that counts. Hardly any of us will suspect that our accustomed way of seeing the world is simply a grand deception, and that our dreams are actually glimpses through the cracks of our reality into a real and coexisting other world. A world more permanent and longer-lasting, a reality which contains the superstructure of our lives and the building blocks for the whole physical universe. Not only that, this is the world where we can find the answers to all our questions and the explanation for why we are the way we are and behave the way we do and why we are here in the first place. Psychologists have recognized this a long time ago, but only a few have foreseen that we can visit the world not just in our minds and in our imagination but for real, and can confront our issues the face-to-face in an environment that is just as hard or as soft as the physical world we live in. We can even penetrate to the very genesis of our own creation and become one with the consciousness which creates and embraces everything there is. Psychology has accepted that nearly every step we take in our waking life is guided by forces we are not even aware of and mostly have no control over. Every thought taking root in our minds is the result of complex programs, conditionings and systems, guided by hidden memories and unconscious drives. Almost daily we are steered by impulses, thoughts and feelings we have little control over, and we have no idea from where or how they originate. Our lives are driven by an engine we simply do not understand. We are looking for remedies for our confusions and pains by moving objects pointlessly around in our outside world. When in crisis, we frequently resort to prayers and blind faith in some mysterious deity or power in the hope that we may ultimately be spared our fate, our inevitable decay and our final disintegration. Most of us are traveling on a train without knowing its destination or when it will arrive. Everybody is fighting for the most comfortable seat and a place by the window so we can distract ourselves by watching the world go by. We keep the fear of the great unknown at arm's length in some distant future by using drugs, fixations and entertainment and continuously trying to pretend that we are immortal and that death only happens to others or in some almost unreachable future. And while we idle away our time with distractions, our train is closing in on its inevitable destination with every hour that passes. These reports can be seen as a city guide for our destiny, recorded by a traveler who has already been there and returned to give testimony of the place we are heading towards. Many thousands of others have done so too, those who have left their body voluntarily or those who have escaped death by the skin of their teeth and returned to tell their tale. They are normal people, holding down responsible jobs. The only thing that makes them different is that they have peeped behind the curtain. The tales they bring back are as different as the people reporting them, and yet they share many common denominators.